This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
And good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge. And you've got Rev Joy and Tal.
Hello.
We've got an interesting show tonight, haven't we?
Yes, it is. It's going to be very exciting.
Well, I don't know about you. Oh, well, I'm sure it's going to be exciting. We're talking to someone from Ekankar.
Yes, I think Ekist is, I think someone is an Ekist, and
yes,
then they're from
the
Ekankar.
Yes, Ekankar.
But we'll have to ask exactly.
Yeah, and most of us have never heard of it.
Yes, I've come across it, and you have as well, but I'm sure, yeah, many people have never heard of the Ekankar.
And we'll talk about that later in the program, but yes, we will be talking to someone all the way from Aotearoa. And in honour of that, we're going to start with a New Zealand song. And this is Hayley Westenra with Pokari Kari Ana. And that was a beautiful song, Pokari Kari Ana.
Oh, that was wonderful. I loved it.
Tonight's guest on Spirit Lounge is a producer, writer, wife, mother, businesswoman, and a member of the Ekankar clergy. On the phone, all the way from my hometown of Wellington, Aotearoa, is Anne Archer-Butcher, and she's going to talk to us about her book, Inner Guidance, Our Divine Birthright. Kia ora, Anne.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Are you enjoying my hometown?
I'm actually in your hometown, I think, not mine. I'm far away from home.
Yes. Where's your hometown?
South Carolina, a little island off the coast there.
Wow. Now, Anne, you started off life as a Southern Baptist. Can you give us an abbreviated version of how you ended up finding Ekankar?
Yes. You know, it was because of spiritual experiences that I was having that I knew that I had to seek out something that was more in alignment with what I believed was happening to me. And yet I didn't really want to leave the faith of my childhood. I loved the minister. I loved the church. I felt that it was home, but I had such strong spiritual experiences that couldn't be explained that I began to feel like I had to move on. But one day in church, I had this experience where I was told, you must stand now and leave the church forever. There's something much greater than this, and you've earned the right to it. And I went to the minister and said to him, Joy, please talk me out of this. Talk to me. And he said, tell me exactly what happened. And I told him. And instead of trying to talk me out of it, he replied, oh, Anne, I wish I could go with you. And I said, why on earth would you say that? And he said, I do believe there's something much greater. And I wish that I could explore that, but this is my faith, this is my church, and I have to stay here, but you don't. You should explore. And that began the open door that allowed me to explore and grow.
So how did you actually come across Ekankar?
You know, it's a part of why I knew that it was at a very real and significant spiritual path. I discovered it inwardly. I was a high school teacher. I was teaching literature, very traditional class. It includes a little philosophy, of course, because it's literature. And my students were 17 and 18 years old, and I was 21, 22 years old. And I had, you know, no sense of what reality and truth might really be on a deeper level. And so I began using the faith of my past to simply say a prayer, "Dear God, teach me truth so that I can teach them." Every hour, on the hour, as a new class would come in, I would say that little prayer. And a startling thing happened in the classroom. One day I went to the board to write a quote that I knew very well from Thoreau or Emerson, one of the transcendentalists. And I turned to look at the students at the same time, just to keep an eye on them. And as I turned back and looked at the board, I realized my hand was writing something completely different than what I intended, as if it had a life of its own. I didn't actually feel like I was channeling anything. I just felt like I had accessed something, and it was internal, and I knew what it was. But the quote didn't have a name on it. It wasn't signed. And the next hour, the same thing happened, and the next, and week after week. And finally, without computers of our own, I decided I'd better send all these quotes to a research librarian at Indiana University, one of the top 10 schools in the nation. And it didn't take her long to get back to me and tell me that these quotes were from Emerson, and I mean, from Aristotle and Socrates and the lost epistles of Plato. And I said, "Well, that's not what I studied, and I certainly don't know it by heart, though I'm certainly familiar with these ancients. I don't know how this is happening." But my students at the same time were reporting to me that something really crazy was happening to them. They felt they were being quickened. And by this, they meant they were smarter when they left my class, but they were also smarter in math and science and not just English. And so we began to do an exploration, trying to figure out, you know, what was happening in the classroom. Everybody could have extra credit if you just go to some classes and learn anything you can and bring it back, because everybody could see, all the students knew. They were trying to get into my classes like crazy, and even, you know, the school began to wonder what on earth was happening. And then this went on for so long, months after months, one year into the next. And finally, one day, I never missed school, but this day I had a toothache and I had to leave and go to the dentist. And a substitute teacher came in, and he looked around the room and he said, "Where did you get these quotes? Because the last quotes in the last months, the research librarian couldn't find them anywhere. She couldn't find them in books in print in Washington, D.C. She couldn't find them anywhere." He's looking around the room, and he seems familiar with them. I have no idea what's going on, but I have a toothache, and I leave for the dentist. And when I came back the next day, the man had left a book on my desk, and he said, "I've heard of these things, but I've never seen anything like this before," in a little note that he left on my desk. And he said, "I think you'll find the underlined passages really interesting." So I tore open the book with my students just hanging over my shoulders trying to see what was going on and find out what this substitute teacher had left, and I opened it, and the title of the book was Ekankar, Key to Secret Worlds, and I had been transcribing it on my board for months, and the student said, "Well, there's where you got it," and I said, "Yes, but I've never heard of this before. I have no idea what this Ekankar is," and they said, "Well, let's read the book," and we did, and it was absolutely undeniably true to all the experiences that I'd been having. And it described experiences that nowhere else had we found anything like that. And because it had sort of found me, I did find that interesting. In the meantime, my teaching had really taken off, and I was invited to audit a doctorate at Indiana University and work with five professors, and I moved down there. And while I was there, I went into a dress shop one day, and the dresses weren't there. And I said, "What is this place?" And the college student there said, "It's an Ekankar Center." And, oh, my gosh, I just, you know, jumped at him and said, "Oh, what on earth do you mean?" I had no idea it was a path, Joy. I thought it was just a book, you know, like Emerson wrote or Thoreau. And so that was the beginning of my discovery of Ekankar.
And you're listening to Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we're talking to Anne Archer-Butcher from the Ekankar Faith. Now, Anne, we were wondering if you could tell us more about what Ekankar is and when and how it started.
Well, you know, the background and history of Ekankar is very interesting, but it's actually an ancient religion from modern times. Paul Twitchell brought it into the modern world, and by the time I had found it in my classroom, this book that he had written, Ekankar, Key to Secret Worlds, he had already passed away, and I really thought this book was just something he'd left behind, but I discovered there was a whole body of work. And, you know, when I began to look into it, when I met that college student in the Ekankar Center, I went to a regional seminar, much like what I'm doing on tour right now in Australia, New Zealand, and all over the world, speaking about my book. Suddenly, I realized this is a whole path. People all over the world know about Ekankar, and I simply didn't. Now, many of them find out about it different ways, but it teaches about dreams, to follow our dreams, about soul travel and past lives. It does believe in reincarnation. The path teaches that. But I found so many tools and so many interesting elements that just completely were in alignment with my life. I totally was transformed when I found this teaching.
And as the title of your book suggests, the book is about inner guidance. Who are the guides?
Well, inner guidance, our divine birthright, is actually referring to the fact that we all have inner guidance. Now, it can be just divine spirit. It can be whatever works for you, you know, whoever you may turn to inwardly. But in Ekankar, it's taught that there are inner masters, great beings who are waiting for us to call upon them, and that they'll assist us at any time. We're not asked to worship them, simply to work with them. You become a co-worker, and they provide the guidance, and they link you to a greater connection with divine spirit. Now, I found all of that sort of preposterous, let's say, and when I found it, I thought, I'll just ignore that part. I don't really understand it, and I'm not interested in it. But I couldn't deny the fact that I found the teachings of Ekankar with this, you know, inner world library sort of pouring into my classroom just because I'd asked for truth. And so if it were these guardians, these ancient masters who were guiding me, then I really thought I should explore it a little bit more.
So how do you know whether or not these inner guidance, whether or not it's just a thought or a desire, or whether or not it's a true calling? I'm assuming that can be sometimes a difficult thing to discern.
Yes, it is. And, you know, the way that I learned it was I began to test it at every turn, and I began to ask inwardly for answers at every turn. It began, however, with a dream experience that I had. I put pictures of the masters on the wall and contemplated them at night, and I had a dream where two masters walked up to me and said, "What is it that you wish?" And I told them very, very gently, you know, I'd like a healing of my life. I'd had a baby, and I knew I needed a healing, and in certain areas of my life, that was really significant. But they kept saying, "Go on, go on." No matter what I asked for, they encouraged me to ask for more. And when I woke up from that dream, I had finally surrendered to them and said, "You know, I don't know everything that I want, but whatever it is that I need, whatever is for my greatest good, I give you permission to give me that." I realized they knew me better than I knew myself. At least that's how I felt in the dream. And when I woke up, my whole life changed. Things started clicking so quickly, I couldn't believe it. It was like there's more going on in the universe than you can imagine. But I think there's inner guidance for every single one of us, no matter what our faith or background or belief. It certainly does not require that you follow the teachings of Ekankar or anything that I'm talking about. And my book, Inner Guidance, Our Divine Birthright, is very clear about that. We really should be respecting everyone's religion or lack of religion, everyone's path or faith or whatever they may have for their calling is really important. And because we're all spiritual beings. We all have the capacity to hear inner guidance. But to your question, how do you know if it's real or not? That's also something only you can tell. For me, I test it. I actually ask again and again to make sure when I can that the guidance is real. But it also comes with a feeling. I get this feeling as if every hair on my body is standing up and there's a real flow. And that's when I know, oh, this really is my guidance. I have to follow this.
Egan Kerr seems to be, and I actually did read your book through, a lot about personal experience and healing and other things happen through that. Does Egan Kerr encourage people to join together as a community?
Yes, there is a community, and there are workshops, there are classes that you can take. There are regional seminars that go on all over the world, and they do encourage that. And really, the thing I loved about Egan Kerr from the very beginning, whether you joined Egan Kerr and wanted to be a member or wanted to be a part of that community or not, didn't really matter so much. The tools were available for everybody. And so I wrote this book with that concept in mind. It's not all about my stories or my healing. It's about our stories, everyone's stories, all of our connections. The principles behind each of my stories can be applied to every person's life. And the protection, the love, and the guidance I've found is available to all of us, regardless of our path. That's why it says it's our divine birthright. It's about our great spiritual nature and that it's the true identity of each of us. And we have the right to follow that and to know more about it.
Now, I read a lot that the Egan Kerr, and from what you said as well, the Egan Kerr have a lot of things like seminars, but do you have like services? And if so, what sort of forms do they take?
Yes, there are services. There's more traditional services like Eck worship services. That's more like a Sunday worship service that lasts an hour. There are workshops that go on all the time with titles like, Have You Had a Spiritual Experience? So that people can go and explore their spiritual experiences. You can imagine when I was having that experience in the classroom, how I would have been attracted to something that allowed me to talk about and learn more about spiritual experiences. And there are many people in the world just like me who were looking for that sort of thing. And Egan Kerr offers many things. You can find it just simply by Googling Egan Kerr in your local area. You can find a list of everything that's going on. And certainly you can find a list of everywhere I'm speaking, all over Australia, New Zealand. I just finished, but innerguidancetour.weebly.com, or the name of the book, innerguidancebook.org, takes you to everywhere I am, and Egan Kerr, Googled, will take you to everything that Egan Kerr offers.
Now, you talk about the law of cause and effect that helps resolve karmic debt. Can you explain a little bit what that is?
Well, sure. I mean, people talk about it a lot these days, don't they, Joy?
Yeah.
Karma really is what we've taken on, coming from a perspective of past lives, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And when we begin to work that off, it can be rather difficult to do so. And in fact, we can find ourselves, as I know many of your listeners probably understand, in an endless treadmill where we seem to be repeating the same cycle of mistakes or experiences, at least, over and over again that we don't want, that we want to get beyond them. That often, that treadmill that we are in is often karma. And to get out of that, to step beyond it, really requires that we take a next spiritual step, a spiritual step of awareness, another spiritual step in terms of changing our vibration, changing our energy, because we become attractive to things according to what our energy or our vibration is like. So when we uplift that, it really can make a huge difference.
That makes a lot of sense when you think about people who seem to go from one disastrous relationship to the next. And often it is around what's happened to them in their childhood and what they've seen modeled.
Yes. And it also, you know, it's not even that we can necessarily blame our childhood. Spiritual responsibility means that we stand up and we say, okay, I'm creating all this mess that I don't like. I'm creating, hopefully, some things that I do like, but I am far more powerful than I might think, and I'm going to accept responsibility and start creating what I want in my life. And it's more than just thinking a thing or feeling what you want. It really is about changing ourselves spiritually so that we can get off that particular track and onto a new one of our greatest potential.
Now, you had a near-death experience in a car crash and use Hugh to deal with the pain in the operating room. Can you tell us about what Hugh is?
Yes, Hugh is an ancient name for God. I learned about it through the teachings of Ekankar, but Ekankar has no corner on this word. It's used by many different religions, many different peoples all over the world. And it's used simply to uplift or to help us through difficulty, or, as I was saying, to change your vibrations on a daily basis to enhance your consciousness. You can sing it as a spiritual exercise. I already knew about that word, Hugh. It's like, it's an ancient name for God. So it's like the God in man when we say human. It's a deep and powerful word that can change everything for us when we begin to chant it. I'll just tell you briefly, it's like this. You just sing, you, and it's a chant that you can do 20 minutes a day, or you can do it a few minutes a day. But what you're describing is, I was in a car crash, and I was in terrible pain. I was out of my body suddenly, and I didn't have any pain anymore. And I didn't want to get back in my body. But when I saw them bring in an ambulance and take away the drunk driver and take my little daughter from the car scene by a teacher who realized she was not injured, but my body was badly injured. And when they took the drunk driver away, I wondered why they weren't rescuing me. But I was totally at peace in the trees, overlooking this whole scene, watching everything happen, hearing everything that people were saying. I could even smell the alcohol coming out of the truck of the man who had hit me. And then I realized, gosh, maybe they think I'm dead. Maybe I am dead. And I saw them approach my car, not with the jaws of life, this contraption that gets you out of a wreckage, you know, of metal, but they were approaching my car with a blowtorch. In other words, they were going to burn their way into the car through the rubble because that would make it faster and easier. But I thought, my body, they're going to burn it. And then I realized, oh, my gosh, they would only do that if they thought I was dead. And I realized I had to get back into the body. And again, I began this word, Hugh, singing the word, Hugh. I was able to get in my body. The pain was horrific. If it hadn't been for my little daughter, I definitely would have stayed outside that body. I had no sense of regretting death or not wanting it, except that I had taken on the love and responsibility of this child, and I wanted to be with her. When I got in the hospital, if you've read the book, you know it's a grueling tale of glass was in my tongue, in my eyes, and it was just really ridiculously painful, and they kept saying, we're losing her, we're losing her. And I began to gently even think the word Hugh, and when they finally pulled the last bit of glass out of my tongue and released it, I said it as quietly and firmly as I could, Hugh, and the surgeon heard me and picked it up, and he started saying, did you say Hugh? And I said, yes, sing it. And he said, Hugh, just like I did. And then the nurses started doing it, and suddenly I discovered all the pain was gone. I could hardly believe it, but I was not in pain. Now, here's my back broken in two places. My head is cut open. My ear is cut off on one side. I am a total wreck, and I feel no pain. And everything stabilized. So all of this difficulty that they were having, they could barely believe it. If you read the story, they show up the next morning in my hospital room saying, okay, what happened in that room? What is this hue? How can we learn it? Is it just for you or can anyone use it? And that was a beautiful experience for me of recognizing the true power of this word to raise our vibrations and take us beyond pain and into the harmony and peace of who we really are as spiritual beings.
That's an absolutely fascinating story.
And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we're talking to Ann Archer Butcher. And like many religions people don't understand, there are claims that it can cause a cult, and also other claims that Paul Twitchell actually plagiarized a lot of what he wrote. How do you respond to these claims?
Well, the plagiarism one is one we already addressed. You know, when I was transcribing the book, Ekankar, Key to Secret Worlds, on my blackboard, my high school students, when, you know, the research librarian said they couldn't find the material, they said, well, you're writing it then, you know? And I said, well, gosh, maybe, I wish, but I'm a student of language, a deep student of language with a master's degree. I looked at that and I thought, I don't think I have that rhythm and meter in me. I don't think that this is me, but it could very well be. I could very well have written it and put my name on it. I could have put my name on any of that because it didn't come with a name attached to it. Now, what Ekankar explains is that there is an inner world library, and that's what my students were insisting. They said it's like a portal in this classroom, and the classroom had become like Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Kids were pouring in. They were sitting on the window seats begging to be allowed to stay in the class. The quotes were everywhere. And we just knew the information was pouring in that we needed. And that was Paul Twitchell's goal. He was to be a master compiler of truth for the universe, to bring it out at a whole new level. So I don't buy any of that at all. And as for any, you know, consideration of Ekankar and what it is, truly for me, it is the path of the greatest spiritual freedom that I've ever experienced. So, you know, I think everything has detractors, don't you, Joy?
Oh, look, I think that a lot of so-called Christian churches could be called cults, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, and people do find their things to criticize, and, you know, I think if people are happy where they are, they should stay there. I criticize no paths. I believe that there is a consciousness that relates to each path and teaching out there. But I certainly would have really been at a loss in this life without the wonderful, magnificent things that I learned in Ekankar. It's absolutely fantastic.
You went through many years of being sick with no diagnosis. During this time, did you ever have doubts about your beliefs?
No, because I kept being guided and told, hold on. It's a really good story you're asking me about there. You're asking me about the time that I was so sick that I could barely vacuum a room without shaking all over. And my husband and I had really scoured the land for a doctor who could give me a good diagnosis, and we simply couldn't find it. They weren't asking the right question, though, and what happened next was that I was invited to speak in Africa, and I had a great affinity for Africa, and I really wanted to go, but heck, I was sick. And so I confessed, okay, I'm sick, do you still want me to go? And they said, you know, follow your inner guidance. Do you feel you can go? And I said, I really want to go. I would almost rather die in Africa than not go. And then I was simply advised, then take your husband with you. Take some friends with you. Make sure you have lots of support. Don't overtax yourself. And go and give yourself plenty of time on either end of the trip. And I did. That's what I did. But in order to go, you have to go and get shots and everything, and you have to go to an international doctor. And when I did, there was the answer I'd been looking for. Now, why did I find it? Because I stepped up in service. I agreed to go do what looked really difficult, not easy at all, but I wanted to do it so badly. I wanted to go speak in Africa, and by stepping up in service, I got stepped up in my health. I never questioned it. I knew I was being guided and led. It was frustrating, though, truly it was, to be that ill for that long, but that doctor started out the question saying, have you got any strange symptoms or anything I should know about? And I said, well, strange symptoms, yes. I have an undiagnosed thing that we don't know what it is. And I began to describe it. And she said, did you ever have malaria? And I said, well, I did have malaria. It wasn't full-on malaria like I went to a foreign country. I got it from mosquitoes who come in the coast in New Orleans, and they travel up the Mississippi River, and I was camping on the river, and I got it, and almost died from it. And she said, oh, she said, then your symptoms, if I'm right, are actually sort of like walking malaria, but a very bad strain of it, and there's a new drug, and if you take it as a preventative for malaria, I think you're going to come home from Africa healthier than you've been in many years. And that's exactly what happened.
What is the view of Ekankar on homosexuality?
They're very accepting, and accepting is probably too weak a word, because their view is that soul equals soul. We're all soul. And so our sexual orientation should not define us, and it certainly shouldn't define our ability to enjoy our spiritual preferences. And Ekankar is very, very open about that. Ekankar is inclusive. And they do recognize same-sex relationships. They may register as family members in Ekankar. And in addition, same-sex marriages can be performed with the Ek wedding ceremony by ordained ministers of Ekankar, as I am, wherever it's legally recognized.
One thing you say in your book is that inner guidance requires us to go well beyond fear into trust. Now, obviously for many people in the GLBTI community, mm-hmm. they've been hurt quite deeply by religious institutions and see it as God rejecting them. I was just wondering, you know, how can Ekankar help them move from this fear of rejection to actually being able to trust?
Well, you've read the book, so you know it's a process, Joy, that you go through. First, you begin to ask for this inner guidance, and you begin to get inner guidance, and you begin to see, wow, that's not me making it up. This serendipity couldn't have happened of its, you know, own accord. And that sort of experience begins to happen, and you begin to build your trust. I know exactly what you mean. My husband and I have a blended family, and his youngest daughter is lesbian, and it took her years of knowing about Ekankar and beginning to practice the teachings and sing Hugh and do spiritual exercises to finally one day she called us after years and said, I'm joining Ekankar. And we said, you know, we certainly wouldn't want you to do that because of us, because Ekankar does not proselytize. They believe that everyone truly should have their freedom and only do what's right for them in their own heart. And our daughter responded back. She said, no, I know I need this next step in my life. Now, years have passed since that happened, and it wasn't long ago that she called us and she said, you know, I just want you to know that life, you know, it still has its challenges, but it is so much better with Ekankar than it ever was before, because she's discovered who she really is as a spiritual being, and she's come into her strength, and she's begun to create the life she really wants. She's made a lot of wonderful changes, and you know, that's what's available for all of us. That, you know, and it really is, doesn't matter that we join Ekankar. Even doing one single thing, like singing the word Hugh and opening our hearts to divine spirit to guide us, helps us open up to love. And love is really the core of who we all are. love is our essence. It's the most powerful force in the universe. It's more powerful than power itself. And Eckhart teaches about the spiritual principles like love and karma. And these help us with our evolution. They help us make choices that are wiser. It helps us get off that treadmill of old karma and step into a brighter future. I mean, that would be my message, is that, you know, it is our divine birthright to live with grace and dignity and freedom, and that's what we want for everyone.
Anne's book is Inner Guidance, Our Divine Birthright. And if you'd like to attend a book signing and workshop with Anne, there's one on Wednesday, the 23rd of July, 7 to 10pm at the International, 81 Bay Street, Brighton. There's also workshops and book signings in Sydney and in WA in Perth. If you want more information, go to www.innerguidancetour.weebly.com. Thank you so much, Anne, for being on Spirit Lounge.
I was absolutely delighted to be here. Thank you so much. I appreciate both of you so much for inviting me.
Enjoy the rest of your tour.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we've been talking to Anne Butcher about her book, which is about Eckhart. So, Tal, what did you make of all that?
Well, they're very fascinating stories, very interesting. I think the way she talks about these things, very articulate. It's very interesting to listen to. This sort of stuff is not my cup of tea, as I think you would know. But that doesn't at all, to me, make it a very interesting and nice experience.
I mean, it's certainly not my cup of tea either, but it may be someone's.
Yeah, and I think this is actually, from everything I've heard, I think it's a pretty wonderful direction to go in if you're going to be engaging in those sort of spiritual movements.
Now, the only thing I know about Eckhart is that many, many, many years ago, I fell madly in lust with this woman. And this was the first time I'd ever fallen in lust with a woman. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm a lesbian. But she was into Eckhart.
I think that's amazing. I think that's so amazing.
She was also very straight and nothing ever came of it.
This Eckhart woman was your sexual awakening.
Yes. She used to leave brochures about Eckhart all around the place at work, which I removed and threw in the rubbish
because
I
don't like them hanging around.
No, I don't like anyone pushing whatever.
Yeah.
Their religion is in a workplace. I don't think it's appropriate, but she was hot.
Yeah. You're like, but seriously. So you read, by the way, a little about some cult accusations and that sort of thing. You don't have to agree, but can you at least tell us maybe a little about sort of what you saw?
Well, they didn't seem to have a particularly good basis for making the accusations. One of the things they talked about was that that there's an inner and outer group. So once you're the outer group and then you become a member, and there's different things happen as a member. But they didn't really go into anything about what it was. And they talked, one of the basis on which they called it a cult was that they tell you if you leave that all these bad things are going to happen to you. Lots of religious organisations do that.
It's not particularly unique to anyone.
No.
It sounds to me that like many, many things that get accused, many new religious movements that get accused as cults, sometimes for good reason, sometimes it's just because they're new and different and so other religious groups feel very uncomfortable about them.
Yeah, but they don't understand them.
Yeah, but to me it sounds, what I would say are the general red flags to whether or not you're engaging in a cult is if this group needs you and encourages you to have all your friends and family convert as well, or you should stop associating with them, and that it's very, very difficult to leave. And neither of those sort of things sound particularly, quite the opposite. It seems to me that this is one of the more accepting groups when it comes to having friends or family members who aren't Eckhart. And I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Well, Anne talks in her book about her sister Deb, who she said was a Christian was a church-going person.
Yeah, it sounded like it's a totally non-issue.
And while Anne supported her, especially when she was when she got sick, you know, there seemed to be no push to convert her to Eckenkar. So it's not about, you know, converting anyone to that.
No, it's not. It doesn't seem to be a saving souls. And
I mean, I just say about Eckenkar, like anything else, that just think about it, research it, think about it. You know, don't leave. You know, we don't have to leave our brain at the door of a church or whatever it is we go to. You know, and does it fit for you? And Anne seemed to be talking about the fact that, you know, for some people it works, it fits, for others it doesn't. I think there's something for everyone. Find what works for you. Or maybe it's nothing. Maybe it is you go down the beach and sit and look at the waves, and that for you is a spiritual experience.
And look, if more religious, if more institutionalized religions felt that way about people, I think it would. I think we would get many less criticisms against religion as a whole. You know, I think it's one of the biggest problems that religion faces.
Yeah,
that sort of attitude.
Yeah, and I just think that it's different. I mean, it's. I read the book, and yeah, it's not for me, but it might be for someone out there.
Well, we always want something different on the Spirit Lounge.
We do, and it's good night from Rev Joy,
and good night from Tal.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.